All right, Derek, we've got about 2 weeks before Christmas, actually 11 days as we record until the fat man gets in his sleigh and comes to visit all of the good Kane boys and girls.
Okay.
So I think we'll save what we're getting all of the Canes for Christmas for next week's podcast, because that is cheap, easy content, and that's what the people demand. So next week you have that to look forward to. But Derek, tonight I want to talk a little about numbers.
Okay. Any numbers in particular, like lottery numbers, just random numbers on the back of a fortune cookie?
I want to talk about numbers.
Is Tommy Two Tone joining us?
I want to talk about the most important number in National Hockey League history. The only number retired globally, I believe, in every single sport. 99.
In every single sport?
No, it's not retired in every single sport. It's the only league that has retired a number league-wide. I know Jackie Robinson, but they still wear that like once a year. Like, no one ever wears 99, right? No one in hockey ever wears 99.
Could Josh Hosang please wear 99 for a game?
If Michael Ferland turned him upside down, he could.
Okay.
But no, 99. The reason I was perusing NHL.com earlier today, and I was like, I know Jeff Skinner's been on a tear. Let's look and see who's at the top of the scoring race. You know, Alex Ovechkin at, 97 years old or whatever ripe old age he currently is.
He's younger than both of us.
I still believe we need to cut him open and count the rings, because I do not believe that to be true.
There's one ring now.
It's red. That went dark. 99 is the combined point totals of the National Hockey League's two leading scorers, and they happen to play for the same team. Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon have combined for 99 points between the two of them, Derek. We are 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 29 games through the season, somewhere in there?
Yeah, well, the Colorado Avalanche have played 31.
Okay, all right, so they're a little ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're combining for north of three a game.
Yeah, that's a lot of points.
Can I put this in additional perspective for Canes fans?
Please do, Derek.
Thank you. Our top five scorers for the Hurricanes.
Michael Ferland, I believe, is one of them.
Yes.
Sebastian Aho, I would have to assume, is one of them.
He is.
Teuvo Teravainen?
Correct.
Justin Williams?
Correct.
And Slavin.
Svechnikov.
Svechnikov. Ooh, okay.
Top five Hurricanes combined, 92 points.
Wow.
Granted, we've played fewer games, so we've got games at hand, Mike. Maybe in these next three games, those top five can explode. This is probably not going to happen. But that's how crazy Colorado is. That's how poor we've been at goal scoring. And like you said, Alex Ovechkin already has 25 goals in 30 games. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, everyone was ready to just say, okay, Patrick Laine, you get the Rocket Richard trophy for the next 10 years. We hope you enjoy it. Connor McDavid is going to absolutely just run away with not only the Hart trophy, but the overall scoring race. And, you know, looking at it a third of the way into the season.
I'm pretty sure Mikko Rantanen, if you went to any reputable sports book, was just included in the group that says field or other. I doubt you could place a single line bet at like what must have been plus 6,400. On Mikko Rantanen to win the Art Ross. Nathan MacKinnon, I'm sure he was up there. Rantanen, probably not so much. So that's a heck of a story that's going on in Colorado. And again, Rantanen, this is his third year in the league. I don't know if he has a new contract or not, but he is going to be one of many players who are going to get expensive contracts this summer.
Yeah, it's an interesting summer. There was a nice article on The Athletic about it this week where they were talking about all of the pending free agents, not only unrestricted but restricted free agents who have deals coming up. Our very own Sebastian Aho is due a deal. I believe Teuvo Teravainen is due a deal.
Yep. Couple guys in Toronto might need one.
Couple of guys in Toronto. Marner and Matthews might need a deal.
Laine needs a deal.
Rantanen needs a deal. And then you've got, you know, some unrestricted guys out there, the likes of, you know, who are on the maybe the backside of their career, but Eric Staal, due for a re-op.
I'm sure Eyes in Raleigh will be on Jeff Skinner. What does he get this offseason?
Exactly. So there is just a lot of intrigue around hockey right now. And while the Canes have not been quite as good as we had hoped, and based upon the article that was in the Triangle Business Journal, not as good as Tom Dundon had hoped, there's a lot of intrigue around not only this team, but all around the National Hockey League. So if you're not watching games outside of Carolina, for your own sanity's sake, we highly encourage you to watch a few of the games out west. And, I mean, gosh, Derek, Toronto, take away what happened on the ice here in Raleigh earlier this week. That is a fun team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, tonight, you and I are going to sit here, and we're going to watch Montreal versus Carolina, and that should be a fun game for us, because the Canes should come out on top of that. But in the split screen will absolutely be that Toronto-Tampa Bay game.
That should be fun, but, Mike, I can't get away from the fact that you're saying the Canes aren't as good as we'd hoped they'd be, and there's hope, and then there's what we thought they would be, because those are two different things. If the Canes get a win tonight, we are tied for third, only losing the tiebreaker in the division to the New York Islanders by virtue of head-to-head.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that bad. We'd be 30 games in and right there fighting for a playoff spot. It's what we all thought. Granted, that's been buoyed by the fact that so far the Metro Division has been a bit dumpster fiery.
Yes. Because we all expected the Islanders were going to be awful.
Mm-hmm.
We did not know that the Penguins could be done. We did not know that the Rangers forgot that you're not allowed to shoot, you know, an 18%, you know, shooting percentage or whatever crazy shooting percentage they've got to keep themselves in the race. And I also didn't think I thought there was going to be a fall off, but I mean, the Devils are just abjectly bad with you know.
Oh,
Has Corey Schneider won a game?
No. I don't think Corey Schneider's won a game.
It's been almost a calendar year.
Oh, man. And his save percentage has been awful. And I think he's got several more years at like $6 million per. So that's going to be fun for New Jersey.
That sucks.
If only they had a GM there who could still hang around and hate numbers over 30 and find loopholes.
Well, I mean, that... I mean, if they could only get a quality defenseman like Adam Larson. Oh, wait.
Maybe, like, acquire him in, I don't know, just a one-for-one trade. Just straight-up hockey.
Player-for-player trade. So, guys, we've got hopefully a lot of fun on board tonight. We've got to talk about the Toronto game. We're going to talk a little bit about the Anaheim game. Talk about the big week ahead that is coming up for the Carolina Hurricanes. Montreal tonight, probably last night by the time you actually listen to this podcast. Washington comes to town.
That'll be tonight.
That'll be Friday night, and then we've got a game on Sunday. I think that's Detroit.
Arizona.
That's right. It's the Oats.
That's why Cat's here.
That's right. Sorry, I was pushing that out a couple of days, and then again, just a lot of fun. We're less than 9 days away from the Carolina Hurricanes franchise donning the green Whalers gear for the first time in franchise history. First time in over 20 years that the Whale has been worn on the ice by this franchise. So lots of interesting things in the coming up just next couple of mm-hmm. weeks here for the Carolina Hurricanes. We've got a great guest. You mentioned Kat Silverman from In Goal Magazine, as well as The Athletic Arizona, plus The Athletic NHL, plus basically everything you've ever wanted to know about goaltending ever. Kat is that person. We are a huge fan of hers, and she stopped by the podcast a little bit earlier, took some time out of her very busy day to spend some time talking not only goaltending but the Yotes with us. We've got your cheat mail, we've got a beer review, we've got fun tonight, maybe
we'll see,
and we've also got like 25 minutes to get the rest of this podcast in because the puck drops in Montreal at 7:30 tonight, and we both want to have a cold delicious beverage in our hand when that puck drops. So Derek, do me a favor real quick.
Yeah,
hit the X button.
Oh yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this Cheaters Never Win. Tonight we're playing Montreal. Derek and I really want to get this podcast done really, really quick. By the way, my name's Mike.
I'm Derek, and we're here for Micro Machines.
Yeah, we're here for Micro Machines. We're also here still part of the Sports Channel Podcast Network. Coming to you on WFNZ 99.9 The Fan from like 10 to noon now. Because
we're not.
No, but the Sports Channel 8 guys are, because like I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to Steve Logan. He's gone. He's somewhere. But they're back and they're in a good time slot. I often listen to them while I'm taking a shower on Saturday morning. So Hayes Permar, I know that you listen to the podcast. Just know every Saturday morning, I'm naked and soapy when I'm listening to you. I went fanfic last week, and at least we won the game in Anaheim, Derek. So
no, the correlation is not causation. How many times do we need to go over this, Mike?
I don't know.
At least one more?
Until it's wrong. but no, thank you guys for listening last week. My apologies for those ears and eyes I may have burnt. But if this Canes team goes on another losing streak, I will break it back out.
So please win.
Yes.
Pretty please.
For the fact of Derek has to be alone in a small room with me, and I look him in the eyes when I read it.
At least you're not naked and soapy.
Yes. I don't know where to go from there, Derek. Yeah. Let's talk about Anaheim.
We won the game 4-1. We finally scored multiple goals on a West Coast road game in that swing, so that was an improvement.
Yeah, first time we had scored more than two goals, I believe, in five games since the last time we had played Montreal in Montreal. So hopefully that is a good omen for this evening. But the contributions in that game kind of came from everywhere. And I think that's why we had hoped that at the beginning of this season, we're like, Aho's going to do it, Turbo's going to do it, Svech is going to do it, Natchez is going to do it, and then everybody else is just going to chip in. I think what we've learned about this team after 30 games is we have to have contributions up and down the lineup, not only from the front, from the forward lines, but we need solid contributions from the defense. And we also, it's got to be throughout the lineup. There isn't going to be a time with this team as is currently constructed where you're going to see two players have a combined 99 points. Would I love for that to be Aho and Teravainen? Absolutely, but just it just doesn't feel like that's the future for where this team's going to be.
No, and the way the offense is, or the offensive contributions we're getting from the defense right now, Justin Falk's been okay. Dougie Hamilton's been underwhelming as far as his offensive contributions, and we'll talk a little bit more about that after the Toronto game we touch on. But the biggest thing I've seen this year is, I don't know how much time Jacob Slavin spent this past offseason watching old ESPN highlights of the NFL quarterback club. Remember when they do those challenges and like they'd have all the best QBs in the league, like, hey, God, what the hell? I can't remember all the names, but it's like, hey, here's Bubby Brister, line it up, and we're going to see who can throw the best deep ball or who can hit the most targets. And it's just like he's trying to master the 106-foot outlet pass, and he's doing it well more often than not, but that's been the most impressive offensive output from the defense this year. I still don't understand why Dougie Hamilton isn't on the first power play, why it's him and Slavin on the second one, why Hamilton's not getting more shots off on the power play. It's just really confusing, and I would like to see more offensive contribution from the defense and then hopefully some guys who can bang home some rebounds. But I don't know which is the chicken, which is the egg in that one. Do you need guys who can camp out in front of the net to cause some screens and get some rebounds for it to make sense for the defense to shoot? Or do you need the defense to go and shoot first and be like, hey guys, here are the pucks, and re-chuck them in?
Yeah, and I think that is something that this team, Michael Furlan was doing a very good job of that. I think Andrei Svechnikov is getting consistently more comfortable in his game, and he's going to be able to do that type of thing. It's just, again.
By the way, Randall Cunningham was the guy I forgot, and so I went to Bubby Brister.
Kind of
a step down.
Always go to Bubby Brister, though.
Why not?
Bubby Brister won a Super Bowl. Randall Cunningham did not. Therefore, Bubby Brister, greater than Randall Cunningham.
Thank you.
Jeff Daniels won two Stanley Cups. Jeff Daniels, greater than Connor McDavid. No, I feel dirty for saying that. I might need to go take a shower. I'll wait till Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Anyway. So, Derek, you mentioned the Toronto game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I was unable to attend the Toronto game. Listened to some of it on the Kane stream and John Forslund and the crew. It sounded like a very ho-hum type of game. Seemed like a tightly played contest. No? It seemed like it was just... Again, from my perspective of listening to John's call, it was bad mistakes ended up in the back of the net, and we never took control of the game. We were constantly playing Toronto's game.
Yes, that much I will agree with. Toronto was the faster team. They were in better position. They had more odd man rushes. They got our defense out of position. They were the better team for the vast majority of the game. I mean, in the first period, I forget what the shot differential was, but it was pretty heavily in Toronto's favor. The second period, the Canes got some more shots, kind of balanced it out a little bit, but it was not quality scoring chances. Just in every single facet of the game, whether it was control in your defensive zone, control in the offensive zone, special teams, Toronto was the better team, and there was no question about it.
Here's an interesting stat for you, Derek. The importance... One of the things I've noticed this season is, again, we've seen this for a long time, it's the importance of scoring first. Toronto's record when leading after one period, 12-0-0. Toronto's record after leading after two periods, 15-0-0. So, if you don't get up on Toronto early, guess what?
You're going to lose.
You lose.
Yeah, the biggest takeaway, though, and we saw a lot of local media harp on this, Dougie Hamilton had his worst game of the season. I don't think there's any argument about that. He was -4, if you want to look at plus-minus as a way to judge your hockey players. I think there are better ways, but... I think there's still maybe some merit in that stat when you're comparing it to your teammates. But what I was most disappointed by was that Dougie was out of position multiple times. He let a player get behind him or just get past him, which a player of his size and skill should not be doing that frequently. He had a bad game. It happens. And it's been an underwhelming season for him so far. But what I was really disappointed to see was the number of think pieces that were immediately churned out by Adam Gold or Luke Tkach or whoever talking about, boy, Dougie Hamilton's been a real disappointment. I go, well, hell, he's been far from the only one, and he's been far from the only one over the past 2 or 3 years. Can we get some more things about players who are underwhelming that aren't in net? Because we've beaten those dead horses as much as we can. So Dougie needs to improve. I think more power play time for him would be fantastic. But I don't know. I think pinning all of that on one player is oversimplifying things.
Well, it's what we do, Derek. We've pinned the last 9 years on goaltending, and now that we have better ? Goaltending, and we'll leave the goaltending talk for when we have the conversation with Kat. I don't know. It's scoring is the number one issue. Mike Maniscalco and Mike Smith on Kane's Cast this week, kind of harped on the fact of this needs to be, you know, balance up and down the lineup. Kane's fans shouldn't focus on having a number one center. I will disagree with those two good-for-nothings who have yet to come on this podcast and fight for the title of best podcast for the Hurricanes in Raleigh, as Sports Channel 8 has named us the reigning, defending, undefeated podcast battle champions. Rantanen and McKinnon. Mm-hmm. When you have a top flight number one center, your wings are really good.
Huh.
What's going on in Buffalo again, Derek?
Oh, I think Skinner's playing with a guy who's a legitimate number one center.
And murdering it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, until this team solves its center depth issue, I think this team is going to have to get, you know, 9 players all chipping in their fair share, and the random night of Jordan Martinook having a hat trick, and Warren Fogel having to actually put some pucks in the back of the net. It's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. But again, big week coming up. Before we get to that, as we get to that big week, let's go to tonight's Dawn from Fathom Realty guest line special guest, and she could talk to us a little bit about goaltending and tell us what to expect when the Yotes come to town on Sunday.
This is Dawn Meyer with Fathom Realty, official realtor of Section 328. You can find me at becauseitshome.com. I am as passionate about helping you make your next move as I am about the Carolina Hurricanes. On average, homes sold by my firm sell 78 days quicker than other homes on the MLS, getting money in your pocket sooner. Buyers also get exclusive strategic representation in the seller's market. Contact me at becauseitshome.com to learn more.
And Derek, it is my distinct honor, my privilege to welcome back, dare I say, one of our top three, top five, definitely top 90 guests of all time.
Oh, easily top 90.
She is the absolute best in the biz as it relates to talking goalies. She also knows a little bit something about the Arizona Coyotes. You read her stuff at The Athletic. You read her stuff at InGoal Magazine. She is the one, the only Kat Silverman. Kat, first question from Pat Clark. Explain to me, the idiot, why goaltending is not voodoo.
I can't anymore. You know, I used to have a really set, prepared answer for you guys, and then a bunch of nonsense has happened over the last couple of years here, and I no longer have a good answer. I don't think it may be voodoo after all.
Well, when it comes to nonsense, I think you're talking to the perfect two guys as not only just a couple of hockey yokels here, but as fans of the Carolina Hurricanes, who apparently we have angered deities of every religion, and we are just sentenced to a lifetime of subpar goaltending. Kat, what in the heck is going on? Why can't the Canes ever seem to get league average goaltending, no matter who the coach is, what the defense is, or who's in net?
I don't know. It honestly, between the Hurricanes and the Flyers, I feel like those are two franchises that have gone through at least half of the league's goaltenders in the last 5 years. And somehow every time they pass through one of those two franchises, it's like their careers just turn to dust. And I've been trying to figure it out. I mean, you guys have seen, I look at like Scott Darling. I looked at what he was doing. I looked at Peter Mrazek, looked at Eddie Lack, Curtis McElhinney in Philadelphia. I looked at, you know, Brian Elliott and 8,000 other guys they've had there with a sub 900 save percentage. And there really seems to be no way to pinpoint it. When the guys on, you know, the Hurricanes, and I have to include the Flyers because I know there's going to be at least one Flyers fan that listens in and howls that I didn't complain about them too. You know, when one of those two franchises, if their goaltenders aren't playing poorly, they're a game or two away from getting hurt. It's like every time one of their guys starts doing well, they get hurt. And so I don't know what's going on. I don't know if... you know, Ron Hextall cursed the team. If Sean Burke with the Whalers, he'll get real mad at me for saying that. He decided to curse Carolina for moving the team. I don't know what it is, but somewhere along the way, somebody did something very wrong, and nobody's appeased the gods yet because something just seems to go wrong. I don't know what it is.
Well, I guess we have to have a do we have to sacrifice Mike Louette now? I don't, that seems awful. That seems like, a bad thing to do, but I mean, if that's what we've got to do. So you hit it kind of on the head with where I was going with my next question, Kat, was, you know, contrary to what Derek said, the Canes are actually receiving league average goaltending from Curtis McElhinney, but C-Mac now on the shelf. And I think the question here in Carolina has been, can Curtis McElhinney stay healthy and be able to take a starter's workload through 50, 60 games of the season? It seems like he has been one of the steadier goaltenders that we've seen in net, and it seems to have a calming presence on this team. Based upon what you know technically, for a guy who's been in the league now for, 10, 11, 12, 13 years? 31 years. Aged really well, by the way. Looks fabulous. Can he technically make it through a season, and can he be the guy that the Carolina Hurricanes need to maybe get over this hump?
That's a really good question, because when you look at Curtis McElhinney, he's, like you said, he's been in the league for 10, 11 years, something like that. But he's never played a starter's workload in the NHL. So we have no sample size to show that even if it was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago saying, oh, you know, he's played a starter's workload before, so we know he can handle it. We haven't seen it in the past. So we genuinely don't know. And even if he does, he's a band-aid, because like you said, he's been in the league for a decade plus now. even if he gets league average goaltending, if he surpasses that point, which really at this point the team needs to not just hit league average, they need to go a little above it. They need to have their goaltender steal them a couple games here and there. If he can't do that, they're in trouble. But if he can do that, at most they have him for another maybe 4 years, and that's being incredibly optimistic about the lifespan of a goaltender's career. So at most they really need someone who's not him, who's 5 or 6 years younger than him, who's able to do it. And that's really the bigger question, because even if he gets them over the mental hump, then the question becomes, can someone follow up for him? Can someone, you know, play the same way that he is, but doing so following in his footsteps? And that's the same kind of pressure that, you know, we've been asking for years now. Is it too much pressure in Carolina for these guys to perform? We'll then have, is it too much pressure to follow up Curtis McElhinney, which is never a sentence I thought I'd utter, but here we are. So, you know, there are a couple good guys coming up in the system. My daughter seems to disagree, but she's very mad about that.
Yeah,
you know, Alex Nedeljkovic maybe too, but we don't know. So that's really the bigger question, is even if he does give you guys a good season, is there someone behind him that can do the same thing and replicate that basically during the team's window coming up here? Because they have a bunch of guys that are reaching their peaks, and that's the bigger question to me.
So the Canes have had four different goaltenders on the roster at some point between call-ups of Ned, granted he hasn't played, Darling, Mrazek, and McElhinney. If you had to pick two of those guys to be your two for this season for the Canes, which two are you taking? And I realize this is like the worst sampler pack ever.
Well, that's the problem, is coming into the season, I would have said with complete confidence, Darling and McElhinney. You know, McElhinney, we saw a fantastic backup season for him in Toronto last year. And it's not like that team had an amazing defense that he was working behind. But like you said, he's gotten hurt. He's on the shelf right now. And Darling managed to keep the team afloat in Chicago while he was there. And as we've seen this year, I mean, this year and last year, the wheels have really fallen off in Chicago. And I don't think that Nick Hjalmarsson was the one piece holding them together. So clearly there have been some holes and some flaws in their defense for a couple of years now, and he did fine with them. So in theory, that should have been more than enough. And having Mrazek there to prove himself as well, that should have been almost a wealth, you know, riches of goaltending. But instead, somehow between the three of them, they're barely stringing it together. So that's a good question. I think obviously Darling did pretty well when he was down in Charlotte for those, I believe he had 4 or 5 games there, right when he got waived, cleared, and got sent down. He's been optimistic. He's been very agreeable about it. I know that when they told him he was going on waivers, even before he cleared, he reported to Charlotte just to get going with the checkers. I think that shows a willpower to improve and to really get his game back. But we really don't know if he can then replicate that in Carolina. And it's reaching a point really with them where there's been so much bad goaltending over the last, I mean, you guys know, the last 5 to 10 years at this point, that really there's no patience left. He doesn't have the luxury of going 10, 15, even 20 games to get his game back, which, you know, in San Jose, they're giving Martin Jones a bunch of time to really get his game back. Mike Smith has been given a decade to get his game back. they don't really have that in Carolina. They really don't have enough. They don't have a safety net for him to get his game back. So he really only has a couple games to prove it. And I think that's a lot of pressure to put on a guy who, as we know, is a great guy, but maybe a little bit more emotionally volatile when it comes to, I think the losses impact him more than they do some of the other guys. So I think there's not really enough leeway for him there.
Well, who know? We do have a string of 3 games in 4 nights coming up. That third game in 4 nights is going to be against your hometown team, the Arizona Phoenix Coyotes, of which I am hoping to wear an old school Peyote Coyote jersey underneath the Hurricanes, so that way when the Coyotes do score, I can go full heel turn and just show my love for everybody on the Coyotes. So tell us, aside from the potentially best penalty kill in the history of penalty kills, what should Caniacs expect when Arizona rolls in here Sunday to take on the Canes?
So that historically good penalty kill, Canes fans will be a little relieved to hear that obviously nobody ever wants a player to be hurt, but luckily for the Hurricanes and for the teams that the Coyotes are facing right now, they're currently without what I consider to be their strongest penalty killing weapon, which is Michael Grabner. He and Brad Richardson have obviously been fantastic together this year on the PK. They've been scoring goals at like an even strength pace. It's crazy. So he's obviously out. He got poked in the eye with a stick during a game I want to say it was last week. He's been walking around the arena wearing this crazy puffy, like hockey puck looking thing over his eye. He had to go get a bunch of tests done. We don't know for sure what it is, what the timetable is for a return, but it's not good. So he's out for the foreseeable future, which is Arizona's loss, but Carolina's gain. Nick Schmaltz is a big one to look out for with Clayton Keller. He's been on the line with Keller and Alex Galchenyuk. That's a question mark right now. I think everyone on the Coyotes is hurt. Galchenyuk obviously missed their game against Boston on Tuesday night. I believe he's questionable for tonight against Buffalo. So we'll know a little more once the team goes to face Carolina, but there's no guarantee he'll be on that line. They've had a ton of chemistry, so if he's there, I agree. If he's there, that's a risk. That's a really tough line. But if he's not, they've been trying out a couple other guys, and there's no guarantee that those guys will click quite the way that Galchenyuk did. He was really good at creating space and setting up plays for Keller and Schmaltz. So that's still kind of a question mark. Obviously, their goaltending situation is a bit questionable for a different reason from the Canes. They've been getting fantastic goaltending, but they've been getting a lot of injuries. Antti Raanta is obviously out for what I believe is supposed to be most of, if not the rest of the season. He's out with a lower body. We've confirmed that it's a knee, but we don't know to what extent or what specifically it is. Darcy Kuemper just came back from injured reserve himself. We have no idea what he was out with. They haven't given us anything. His first game back, he looked decent. His reads were a little rusty on his glove side. We don't know if that'll be cleaned up by that point. Aiden Hill has been fantastic so far, but he's a rookie. He's a call-up, so we don't know how well he can sustain that high level of play. And then Calvin Pickard came from the other goaltending graveyard in Philadelphia, where his numbers pretty much tanked this year, as they tend to do in Philly. So I know that he's been working with the Coyotes goalie coach, Corey Schwab, trying to fix that. I believe they don't want to put him in a game until he's really addressed those issues with Schwab. I spoke with him about it a little bit on his second day in Arizona. He said that there was something that he'd been trying to improve upon and was doing a little bit too much. So I don't know if it's even possible for him to be, game ready at the NHL level, fixing whatever was broken in Philadelphia in time for the Carolina game. But there's a chance they'll get him, and he's a wild card. So who knows? The Coyotes currently have a bunch of prospects up because, like I said, a bunch of their players are hurt. Michael Bunting, one of their guys that got called up, his idol is Brad Marchand. So that's someone that Canes fans will definitely want to watch out for. I got a call from one who works with the Worcester Sharks a couple years ago when the Coyotes, their AHL team was still on the East Coast. And they said, hey, do you know who Michael Bunting is? I said, yeah, he's one of our prospects. And they said, yeah, he's trying to fight our entire bench. Does he normally do this? And I was like, mm-hmm, yep, pretty much. So, he's a big energy guy. He scores a lot of dirty goals. He runs his mouth a little bit, can't really say anything that he's said on a podcast, but he's a lot of fun. So, if anything, he'll be amusing to watch if he's still there, but I don't know who's going to be healthy and who's not.
Well, I would say you could say them on our podcast, but maybe not in front of your daughter. And as I can tell, motherhood is calling. I have one last question for you. When the Canes acquired Jordan Martinook this offseason, you were so quick to say how much we were going to love him. And the fact that he scored a hat trick, he's been good for Svechnikov, and he's been one of the more consistent forwards for this team generating offense this year. Kat, did you see any of that coming?
I didn't see the hat trick coming for sure. Because he's pretty fast. He's a good hustler. He's positive. I saw the role model bit coming in, but his hands are not necessarily the softest in the league, so wasn't really expecting a 3-goal game from him. But when it comes to players that even if you don't expect it, you're glad to see it for, that's probably top 5 for me in terms of a guy that you want to see score a hat trick. So even if we weren't expecting it, you know, it's great to see him have all of his hard work pay off like that. So he's a, like you said, he's good for the young guys. He's one of those guys who, regardless of whether a player's feeling left out because they're kind of quirky, they're shy, they're from another country and don't speak English too well, you know, they're a young guy, they're an older prospect who felt like, you know, they were never going to get a call up and now they feel out of place, doesn't really matter. He's that guy who, he's the kid in elementary school who goes over and sits with the kid by themselves just to make sure that they have someone at lunch. So he's obviously someone that everyone wants to see succeed, regardless of what team you root for. So I'm not super surprised to hear that he's helping guys. But
well, not only helping guys, it seems like he's taken Svetch under his wing, and we look forward to him teaching Svechnikov now how to score hat tricks, because that's what we need. We need more Svechnikov hat tricks here in Raleigh. Hopefully we see our first on Sunday and I don't have to go full heel turn and pull out my peyote coyote. But folks, if you're not following Kat, she is a wealth of knowledge and we love everything that she does. She is at Kat Silverman over on the Twitters. You can read her stuff over at The Athletic, Arizona Athletic NHL. You can also check out her stuff over at In Goal Magazine, at In Goal Media on Twitter to follow them. But Kat Silverman, you are absolutely one of the best. It is only 188 days until the National Hockey League entry draft, and it is our solemn vow. We owe you a beverage of your choice when we see you in Vancouver. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, and give Iz a hug for us.
Absolutely, will do. Thanks for having me, guys.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, bye, guys.
Thanks, see you. Kat Silverman, I am smarter every time I get a chance to not only listen to her stuff, read her stuff, or talk to her. I literally put Kat in the pantheon. Allison L., Kat Silverman are far and away two of the smartest and best guests who have ever come on this podcast.
Absolutely. One thing I wanted to talk about a little bit as we've talked about some of the Canes performances, and especially talking with Kat about goaltending, is Peter Mrazek and why he has made our naughty list this season, Mike.
Tell me more, Derek. I've been working out of town.
Yeah.
I haven't heard.
So earlier this week, the Charlotte Checkers said, hey, starting tonight, actually, they're going to let each player have their own goal song. Like, man, that's really cool. We get to see some of the players' personality. Makes it more fun in the arena. So Sarah Sibian, on the podcast last week, talked to the Hurricanes about it. And she talked with each player in the locker room about, hey, what would your goal song be? And there were a lot of truly awful choices, some good choices. And a bonus from Peter Mrazek that he said he wants to get rid of that weird cheaters never win chant before power plays. I don't know what we did to anger
Derek, we'll stop you right there. What? Blasphemes such as this will not stand. Peter Mrazek. Actually, no. I'm talking to you, Mike Sundheim, director of communications for the Carolina Hurricanes. We do not do this often. We demand that Peter Mrazek be delivered to us on this podcast to answer for his blaspheme.
All right.
Peter Mrazek needs to be here. I'm going to let the man defend himself. Much like we let Chris Terry defend that just awful hummus laden. Well,
if you want to call that a defense, it was basically, I like hummus.
Well, how about this? Mike Sundheim, we need Peter Mrazek on this podcast. Not often do we take such blaspheme, but there must be answers.
You're right.
We must get to the bottom of this. So, Derek, let's let the man have his day. We could roast him for hours here talk about how he couldn't beat out Jimmy Howard, about how he was an abject failure in Philadelphia, and what he needs to worry himself with might be stopping the puck and not actually, you know, worrying about our damn chant. But we're gonna let the man have his have his day in court.
All right.
So we'll bring him on. We'll be courteous as we always are. We'll let him explain that. And again, this is not something. This is a chant that's been done in the arena for 20 years almost, mm-hmm. right? I did this in college. This was a college thing that I brought from me. And yes, it may be stupid, but guess what? It's the only chant in the arena that Fant started that's not "Come on, Canes" or "Let's go, Canes" that has actually caught on.
Yep.
So we'll take it. If somebody doesn't like it and you have a better idea, we love new chants. Start them. Get other people to do them. Organize people like the Red Eye Rowdies have done. And let's figure out better ways to do this. But until then, let's make noise and let's enjoy our team. And Peter Mrazek, I look forward to speaking with you, sir.
Hmm. I didn't expect a sir on that one.
Sir.
All right,
Derek. So, I mean, Michael Ferland?
Yeah, so it was encouraging to get him back after the concussion. Disheartening to see that he left the game only 5 minutes in, but I think it was good.
Yes.
I think it was very good that, one, he felt enough confidence to say, "I'm not right," and I think it was good that the team took him at his word, tested him, and said, "Nope. You're not going back in."
Yeah, I have to give, you know, huge compliments and a shout out to the Canes medical staff, the Canes coaching staff, and just the organization as a whole for taking concussion and concussion protocol seriously enough to make sure that not only the current with Michael Ferland is protected, mm-hmm. But Michael Ferland's future is protected because. Amazingly outstanding, just great young man overall, and we want to see him healthy. We'd prefer to see him healthy on the ice scoring goals, but his health is first and foremost. So
yep.
Congratulations to everybody inside the organization for that, and it's an opportunity for hopefully somebody to step up. Yanni Kuokkanen was recalled. He'll play tonight in Montreal with, I believe, Raskin McGinn. So tonight we get to get Kuok kids. So I'm looking forward to Kuokkanen actually establishing himself so that way we can do a Get Quoke shirt.
That'd be fun. I like that.
Yeah. So we've got that up. That'll be interesting to see. And also, you know, right now down, you know, two guys that were expected to be in the top six all year with Jordan Staal and Michael Ferland. Two of your top six out makes it really tough. We just need,
especially
to
when your top six isn't that strong to begin with.
Right. Well, and particularly at the center position too. You know, one thing that I thought was interesting is with Jordan Staal out, Sebastian Aho actually got a little bit of penalty kill time in Anaheim, and he seemed to do that really, really well. Is that something that could be kind of a buoy to his game? Something that helps our penalty kill and maybe. Something that sparks Sebastian a little bit by getting some of that time.
I can see it because he's got really good wheels, so he could get some breakaway opportunities.
And he's so smart.
Yes.
I mean, smart.
He's a heady player.
And you know, Jordan Staal, not the wheeliest of guys, but just rangy and a very smart hockey player. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of these guys being hurt gives some other guys an opportunity to up their game, maybe do some things that they haven't done before, and set us up better for the second half of the season. Because as we mentioned earlier, with the Metro being such a dumpster fire, if we can have some guys learn and have some lines and some scoring tandems really take off in the second half, you know, maybe we've got something.
Maybe. One thing I wanted to bring up about tonight's game is it's going to be, or when you're listening to this podcast, it was fun to see the Hurricanes in the red jerseys on the road. We did it all on the West Coast swing. Found out today from Pierre LeBrun, that apparently Tom Dundon is not a fan of the away white jerseys that the Canes have. I personally wish that the whole league would revert to white jerseys at home. That way you get to see every other team's road colors and more of that versus, hey, we're always in red, and hey, we always see white with some accent colors from the other team. But also, Dundon had some things to say in the Triangle Business Journal about how much money he's losing with the team, how much he's willing to lose. But I think the biggest thing that I took away from that Triangle Business Journal article, I don't know if we're still doing hashtag for now with them, is that he eventually sees the arena being downtown because that's where all these successful arenas are. I don't know how I feel about that.
Raleigh downtown has changed and will continue to change. By the time 2024 comes along, I think if you've seen any of the Raleigh Downtown Authority has had a plan at one point mm-hmm. for Raleigh Downtown at 2040. And there is a nice swath of land.
Are there flying cars in that one?
Not yet.
Damn it!
But there's a nice swath of land just south of the Red Hat Amphitheater that could be leveraged for a large arena complex. And if Raleigh does continue to grow, and the center of Raleigh becomes the combination of that arena, whatever happens with Dix Park, and, you know, Red Hat, soon to be IBM Amphitheater. What worries me about that is obviously the tailgating and the tailgating traditions.
That is my worry.
And I think we'd have to figure out a way to do that. And I don't even know if that is something that would live forward. We've got to figure out, you know, because I believe Tom Dundon said if they were to stay in PNC Arena, it's $200 million in upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of money I don't know. Debbie has to replace an offensive coordinator, and Eli Drinkwitz was only making $300,000. I don't know if she can spend. I don't know if the Sentinel Authority is spending $200 million.
Yeah, for as nice as some of the finishes and some of the details still feel in the PNC Arena, that building is just about 20 years old now, and it's amazing.
Well, except for the kitchens. I hear they're about 80 years old, and we'll touch on that too.
Hey, but you know, we've been to some other arenas for the NHL draft, and man, the American Airlines Center in Dallas is kind of weird, but one thing I've noticed, whether it was the United Center in Chicago, the American Airlines Arena in Dallas, whatever the hell they call it in Sunrise, the concourses are wide where they are, and there's no reason it shouldn't be a little bit more open and have more going on. People have talked about maybe more tables downstairs at the PNC Arena. There's a huge plot of land that the arena occupies, and why it feels so tight in that building is beyond me. I think that's one of the bigger struggles now, is when you go to a game, the amenities and the experience that a fan wants now versus 20 years ago are very different. And right now, I don't think the PNC Arena meets a modern fan it meets it. It doesn't exceed it in a way that the modern fan experience dictates you do to keep bringing people back.
Well, not only that, by the time we get to 2024, is that an arena you want to put $200 million into and then be in for another 20 years?
Can I park my flying car there?
Derek, I've told you, I've seen the plan. There is no flying car until 2042.
Damn it!
So,
24, but like 2042? We're
yeah,
good?
Yeah, 2042, you're good.
Okay,
yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of things missing inside of PNC Arena. One of them is corn dog nuggets, and two of them is cleanliness, obviously. For anybody who may have read the ESPN.com article ranking the dirtiest and the what was the rank? It was the furthest from local average.
It was like most health violations or something.
What the average health violation was per most restaurants and then in the arenas. 17 of the 25 concession stands had highly critical issues, and you know, everything from chicken wings not being the right temperature and being stored improperly to hamburgers sitting in pools of blood.
Yeah, the quote was pooled blood near burgers. And as someone tweeted to us, this is from at Caniac Campbell, they tweeted that to us. When I first read pooled blood near burgers, I was thinking human blood, not that it was just juices from the meat. Like, that's obviously not ideal that, you know, if you have a cooked burger and there's the juices next to it from uncooked meat, that's not ideal at all. But I was thinking it was like people blood next to it. I'm going, good Lord, what is going on here? I'd much rather just eat a head of romaine lettuce.
Someone was so unhappy at the lack of corn dog nuggets that they performed self-mutilation. And that's awful, and no one should ever do that because corn dog nuggets aren't worth it. But corn dog nuggets are delicious. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of that, because that's another PR hit for the Canes.
They were third worst in the NHL. Now, granted, a lot of these violations were older. I think of the three that I saw listed, two are from 2016, one is from 2017. But I think that was kind of the case for this whole report, that it went back years. And it's not a good look to be in the lowest 10% of the league as far as
And also, violations. As far as I know, the head of The head of food services at the Carolina Hurricanes has not changed for the last few years. So who was the person in charge in 2016 is still in charge today. So it'll be interesting to see and hear what changes are made. And I think that's part of it, right? They don't necessarily have the proper cooking facilities and areas to do things like creative, a lot of creative dishes. I think that's why we see, you know, when they do the Hurricanes Homegrown series, it's limited to just one or two places inside the arena. It just doesn't necessarily built for that scale. So it's going to be interesting to find out what happens when, you know, when the arena opened and we had barbecue nachos and whatever it was, 1999, that seemed, you know, it wasn't a hamburger or a hot dog. Oh my gosh, this is revolutionary. Now we get a couple of games a year where we take things that we already make, like waffles and chicken strips, and we put them together in a dish and call it a homegrown series. Canes have got to do better when it comes to that. The arena's got to do better. I think Dundon's demanding that they're going to do better. And I think this is just more fuel for the fire that Tom's going to figure out a way to get a new arena. Another interesting bit, and I'd love to talk to the guys over at the 6 Point Weekend podcast about this. Tom, near the end of the article, mentioned how he has talked with local people as well as the MLS about potentially investing in an MLS team here. But he kind of dropped out that he didn't think, because there is a two more teams to be announced, but he did not think that Raleigh was going to be on that list of names where they were going to announce it.
Okay.
Because, again, if you have not necessarily a hockey arena, but you take an MLS arena and you put it downtown where they were talking about putting the NCFC arena, which is currently on the land occupied by the North Carolina government Tetris building, the tall white building that's shaped like a Tetris piece, that could be interesting and maybe give Tom his plot of land to develop in downtown Raleigh if he were part of that MLS club. But I don't know. Lots of interesting thing. Tom's obviously focused on winning, and I think that was the biggest thing. He said he's not doing well with winning, and the only reason he would ever sell this team is if he gets tired of losing. Tom, welcome to being a Caniac.
God, right?
We're here for you. Feel free to come on after Peter Mrazek's on, and we can talk you through how we've coped for the last 9 years. And hopefully the winning starts again.
I know one way that we've coped, and I'm going to get to that when we talk about the Bottle Mix beer review, but Mike, between the segments that we've done and the beer review, there's something that's missing, and I don't know, maybe you can help.
Little cheat mail, gotta go get some cheat mail.
So Mike.
Yes, sir.
I believe I'm going to give you the first question. We kind of touched on this with Kat a little bit, but I'd like your thoughts as well. This is from Ryan. Don't look, it's Ryan. Do you see McStarter being the long-term solution for the goalie problem, or will the Canes make a move for a proven starter? Also, the Canes say they're looking for a top six scorer. Who will it be? Who will it ever be?
So, C-Mac is not the long-term answer. Curtis McElhinney is 35. He's never proven that he can take a starter's workload, and we've already seen him injured this year. So I do not believe that Curtis McElhinney is the answer.
Okay.
I do not know if a trade is out there to be had for the answer. I think if you look at teams that are currently successful in the National Hockey League, most of them have either gotten their goalie young and then groomed him, or drafted their goalie. Look at Pittsburgh. Now, and again, maybe not this a great example, but Matt Murray groomed him. Vasilevsky groomed him. Holtby groomed him. Price groomed him. Lundqvist groomed him. I mean, the Pekka Rinne groomed him. Tuukka Rask groomed him. It's got to be one of the guys in the system. You know, Booth, Helvig, Ned, TBD.
I see big things for TBD.
Yeah. What I don't necessarily think I want to see us do is go out there and pay Sergei Bobrovsky a whole bunch of money.
I'm with you.
And again, there's some really good goalies out there. Carter Hutton. Carter Hutton's a great example. Young guy, got his chance to show. Now, again, we thought we had that guy in Scott Darling. Sometimes it just doesn't pan out. right? Yeah. Scott's back with the big club while C-Mac is still hurt, and obviously, as Kat said, he played well down in Charlotte, and we'll see if he can write his game or not, but I don't think anybody's hanging their hat. I know we're not on Scott turning his game around. We've been thinking for years that Alex Nedeljkovic is the answer. Callum Booth hasn't played bad. Jeremy Helvig's out there. Again, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, you look at, you know, Kat mentioned the backup that's playing down there in Anaheim, playing really well. The backup to Smith in Pittsburgh has not played bad. Eventually, you have to get somebody out of your system. We literally have not gotten anybody out of our system since 2004, 2003, when Cam Ward came out of the system.
Yep.
So the answer to that is no. And who are the Canes get on the free agent market to fix their woes?
Not necessarily a free agent. He just said, who's the top six guy?
Oh, who's the top six? Oh, that's easy. Evgeny Malkin.
Okay.
Yeah.
How?
We are going to trade Scott Darling. We are going to trade Justin Faulk. And the rights to Anson Carter to Jim Rutherford, because we know Jim Rutherford loves Anson Carter.
He couldn't possibly turn that down. And a back rub from Chad LaRose.
Stop it. Stop it, Derek.
They're gonna watch Ghost together and do some pottery.
At what point do the Canes add the option, we don't score, to the list in the Chaim Sausage first goal contest? And if they do add that option, what percentage of people choose it?
They will never add it, but they should. And I would say not nearly enough people would choose it.
I think obviously the amount of people who would choose it would incrementally go up after we had three consecutive losses. Even if they were like 5-4 losses, uh-huh. Canes fan's going to Canes fan.
This from Kevin Kohler at Kohler K08. If dogs played hockey, would they wear four skates with a stick in their mouth? Or would they skate on their back legs and hold the stick with their front legs and mouth combo?
Ooh, great question, Kevin with a K.
As opposed to Kevin with a C?
No, Kevin with a J.
That's Jevin.
Oh, okay.
Or Kevinge. I don't know where you put the J.
That's a great question. I'm okay, so the question is what type of dog, right?
Well, not necessarily.
I mean, because if like you've got a tiny dog, like a Marty San Luis dog, I mean, that dog is obviously just two legs. But if you've got like a...
I want to see a dog with quads that big.
But if you have a dog like a St. Bernard, you know, the Michael Ferland of dogs who are going to stand in front of the net, I mean, that dog obviously is skating on four. So I think it depends upon the breed of dog. Okay. And I think what percentage of that depends upon what breed your general manager is.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll accept that answer.
Okay. Derek, do you have thoughts on this?
Not really.
Okay. So Derek, this one comes from our buddy Daddy-O at @slow_D.
Respect the underscore.
No disrespect to Ferland, who's been outstanding, but how many games must the fourth line grinder miss before he's no longer the goal-scoring leader of this team?
Ferland is not a fourth line grinder.
That's the correct answer. Like, Michael Ferland is going to make $5.5 million when he scores his free agent contract. Michael Ferland is a power play specialist who is a top six to top nine player, depending upon the makeup of your team.
Yeah, he's a power forward.
Yeah.
He's not a bottom four or fourth line guy. This is from Will Looper at W Looper. So far, we've gotten a lot of words with very little action. Any reason to trust this front office?
Yes, because you can't judge a front office based upon 30 games, particularly when you've got two of your top six who is hurt, your goaltender that you were counting on to have a rebound season and you built all of your goaltending marketing around in the offseason, got hurt in the last preseason game and has since not been able to find his game. There's been too many injuries and there has been too many underperformances by players who should be performing better. Victor Ask is another, I think, key injury. So you take, you know, three guys out of your top nine for a significant amount of time in the first 30 games. You can't judge them on that.
Fair enough.
Derek, let me hit you this one from our buddy Albie Hood. Happy belated birthday, Al. Should the NHL jersey rules be like the NBA in that as long as the two teams aren't wearing the same colors, they can wear whichever jersey they want?
Yes.
Yes, the correct answer to that is yes. Actually, the even better correct answer is home jersey should always be white. Mm-hmm. Opposing team should get to wear their color of choice when they come to town. I know the reason they don't do it is because the home team wants to be able to show off their alternates, and then if they're doing their alternates, then teams have to travel with multiple jerseys, and that makes it all hard. I get it. I would much rather see 29 teams worth of different colors than 29 teams of white.
Yes. Also, I loved what the Canes and Bolts did in the preseason. Just like the Canes and Ducks did a couple nights ago. Both wear your dark jerseys as long as they don't, you know, mirror each other too much and it's okay for TV.
Yeah.
Blue and red, black and red, they work out great.
Perfect.
Let's see what else I got for
Not
you.
Not a lot of controversy on this week's cheat mail, Derek.
Oh, okay. Here might be one. This might be the top six question we're looking for from Jason Mariani. Jeremy Rutherford put out the other day that everyone on the Blues is available for a trade. So, thoughts on Vladimir Tarasenko and the Canes taking a shot at him?
Does Vladimir Tarasenko currently play center?
He does not.
Vladimir Tarasenko does not fix the Canes' ills. You need a center to help Vladimir Tarasenko.
Who is Vladimir Tarasenko's center?
Ryan O'Reilly?
Before him. Like, who was there last year?
Stastny.
Okay. Is Stastny a number one center?
No. Stastny's at two at max.
Okay.
And
Vladimir Senko in the last 4 years has 139 goals.
That's a lot of... Sebastian Aho, Vladimir Tarasenko, Teuvo Teravainen as your top line.
Give me that.
I'm okay with it. What worries me, though, is then the other investments we have to make in re-signing players around this team... Do we then strap ourselves contractually where we cannot make a play for a number one center that's going to cost you $9 million to go sign?
So we'd have to trade a good defenseman, ostensibly, to get a Tarasenko. That would cost, you know, one of those $4 to $5 million defensemen. Tarasenko's only making $6.5 million for the next 4 years.
Again, I'm not worried about
and
the cash.
And he's 25, 26. We're like, cash. $2 million.
We're cash flush, and currently...
And the cap's going up to somewhere between 81 and 85.
And the Canes are currently 31st out of 31 teams in terms of spending.
Mm-hmm.
That goes up dramatically next year when a bunch of guys need to get paid.
Yep.
So, Derek, last one from this mic. This one from our buddy Dustin Boudreau, former employee over at Bottle Mix.
Yeah, this is the last one.
F. Mary Kill. And we don't normally do... F. Mary Kills as it relate to people. So these are the concepts these people bring along with them. F. Mary Kill.
All right.
Peter Mrazek hating cheaters never win.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Wilson being an asshole. Alex Semin and his bad wrist.
Ooh. These are all just wildly unpleasant. I'm killing Tom Wilson. He refuses to learn.
You and Ryan Reeves. Yep, that's the right answer.
I'm just killing him. I'm going to F Alex Semin, because even with a bad wrist, you can still have a good F. And he's
good in short spurts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's part of the tantric line. He has to be good at an F, right? The stall Semin?
Yes.
And I'm going to marry the Peter Mrazek one because, one, I can't wait to have it out with that guy. And two, I just am glad to hear a player say something interesting about this fan base.
Yeah, and that's
as little as I like it. It wasn't a hockey answer, and I liked that.
And here's the thing too. We make fun. I think it's kind of awesome that they have actually that players hear it on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Because that just reminds me when we give the "you suck" chant to Stanley Cup winner Braden Holtby tomorrow night, he's going to hear us.
Damn right.
All right, Derek, you are holding a bottle.
I am.
And you have a glass.
I do.
I believe all of this came from a place called Bottle Mix.
It did, which is on Creedmoor Road. But you already knew that. What you may not have known is that Bottle Mix has a wine tasting going on this Saturday, another fancy wine tasting on next Wednesday. So if you're doing some holiday shopping or you just want some good stuff for you, go taste some really great wines then. They've got some awesome bubbly next Wednesday. And then next Thursday, they're tapping a keg of Mother Earth Silent Night, which is one of North Carolina's premier beers to seek out for this holiday season. Tonight, I grabbed a holiday beer that is not from North Carolina, but it is from Richmond, Virginia, from Hardywood Brewing, who until this year didn't distribute down this way. This is their Christmas Morning. It's an Imperial Milk Stout with spices and coffee. And the label says, Hardywood Christmas Morning lends a cheerful decadence to our gingerbread stout through deep conditioning on locally roasted Mexican coffee beans from Black Hand Coffee's Black Hand Coffee Company. Skip the leftovers, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, it's a delicious beer. Hardywood makes wonderful beers. And this is seasonally appropriate. I know Mike and I are absolutely planning on doing a podcast next week, but this beer is out now. I want folks to go to Bottle Mix and say, I want a bottle of Christmas Morning so I can have it either tonight or maybe hold it for Christmas Morning. It's delicious. It is pretty dark in color. It is a milk stout. It's an imperial milk stout. I don't know exactly if it passes the Mike Flanagan light test. Mike, any word?
No. No. That was a sneeze from me, but that light test is nothing to sneeze at. None escapes.
Well, yeah, there's a little around the rim. A
little around the edge. Not quite as dark as the WD-40 that we drank.
Yeah.
But no, still very good dark beer.
So it starts with their gingerbread stout base, and you definitely smell some of that ginger, the molasses, the dark sugars in here. But you do get some of the coffee that's in there, and it's really, really nice. That roasted element adds a little chocolatiness to it. The milk stout has a great texture to it. This beer is darn delicious. It comes in a 16-ish ounce bottle. It's like $7 or so, 9% alcohol. Absolutely wonderful. I highly recommend this beer for such a well-made beer that is going to sell out. It's a really reasonable price. So highly recommend this beer. Go to Bottle Mix. Tell them you listen to the 328 podcast. You want the 328 beer of the week, the Hardywood Christmas Morning. And buy some other wines and beers while you're there. If you're, you know, just wanting to hang around the house, or if you're hosting, or if you're going to some holiday gatherings and you wanted to bring something along, they will take good care of you. And yeah, really, really good stuff.
Derek, it's the time of year. Here's my suggestion. We are, again, 11 days away from Christmas. Mm-hmm. If you've not yet gone to stock up on your beers that you're going to need when your family comes to town, to A, impress the father, the father-in-law, make sure that they get some really nice stuff when they're here, or to take to any of your Christmas parties that you're attending, or if you just need to imbibe to put up with your family, any of those reasons, all good reasons to go to Bottle Mix. Go buy yourself. Go stock up a little bit. It is the holiday season. Tell them Section 328 sent you, and we greatly appreciate it. We appreciate all of our sponsors this year, Don from Fathom Realty, the good folks over at Bottle Mix, and the good folks over at Sports Channel 8 for still putting up with us. Even though they're not really a sponsor, they're kind of weirdly family.
That they are. The other thing we want to say, if you're still doing some shopping this season, before you go to Amazon, go to section328.com, click the Buy on Amazon button. It'll take you to Amazon, won't cost you an extra dime, but they'll kick a percentage over to us as a way to say thank you, and Jeff Bezos doesn't need the money. We could use a little bit of that. Helps us keep putting this podcast on, helps us get to Vancouver to meet great folks like Kat and bring this podcast to you as good of a show as we can put forward. We've also started doing something in the last week or so where we're taking...
I was going to say, if you go to Amazon, and when you go to section328.com, you click on the Buy on Amazon button, you go to Amazon and you buy yourself an Amazon Echo, an Amazon Dot, or maybe even an Amazon Show, any of their Alexa devices. You can then, once it comes in and you unwrap it, you get it all hooked up to the Withies, and it's working greatly for you, you can say, Alexa, enable Section 328 update skill. And Derek, what then happens?
Then yours and my dulcet tones are added to their daily briefing, or as close to daily as our work schedules will allow. But we'll hit you with like a minute or so of Kane's news just about every day through your Alexa enabled device.
All you have to do is say, Alexa, play my flash briefing, and you can select what type of news you want. This was really kind of... We were encouraged to do this by our buddies at our sister podcast, Cheaters Never Pin, and they did this, so you can always enable the Cheater Never Pin skill if you want to keep up with everything that's going off in the professional wrestling ranks.
Mm-hmm.
But this will be daily or semi-daily, particularly days after games or anything after Canes do. One of the two of us will give you about a 45 to 75 second update on just what's going on in Canes land, and probably as part of that, encourage you to make sure that you're subscribed and listening to this podcast, which you can also do through your Amazon Echo.
How about it?
So, folks, everybody, again, happy holidays for those who have already celebrated their December holiday, and for those who still have Christmas and everything else to celebrate. It is a very joyous time of year, and we love spending it with family. We consider you our hockey family, probably our favorite family. Than maybe some of our real family. So we appreciate it. Big game tomorrow night. So big game Sunday. Big game coming up again on the 23rd. Maybe wearing some green. We'll talk a little bit about that next week. One more podcast coming to you next week, and then we might skip a week because it's the holiday, and we might actually want to spend time with our actual family.
Get the hell out.
Yeah, I know. It happens. But again, thank you guys for doing that. We'd love to hear from you, you know, whether it be over on the Twitters at @section_328.
Respect the underscore.
Yeah, you know, check out the Facebook. We don't do much on Instagram, but, you know, check us out there every now and then. You know, why don't you come to a game? Make your way up to the third level, walk around to the section where it says 328, come to row C, come find Mike and Derek, say hi. We love to meet and chat with you guys before the game, after, you know, during intermission. If you come up during the middle of the game, we'll probably be like, we're watching the game. But then we'll happily talk to you during intermission. So again, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for enabling the brand new Amazon Alexa skill that we're launching. Thanks to Derek for taking all of the time to get all of that set up. And just thank you guys for everything that you do for us. It has been a great year. One more episode next year or next week, full of probably just cheap, useless content. But it's Christmas.
And so, you know, another podcast.
Yeah, that's it. But until then, my name is Mike.
I'm still Derek.
It's 7:33, Derek. Let's go watch the
game. I got a live in-game update.
Live in-game update.
Puck has not yet dropped.
There you go. Until then, we'll talk to y'all soon.
Bye.